Good morning. It is 10:45 a.m. May 1st, 2025. This is an informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission regarding case numbers PU-24-381 and PU-24-382. The two are consolidated. We're not doing them separately. This regards a transmission line, kind of a redevelopment over in the area southwest of Center near the Minn Kota power plant, and then from there going a few miles east, having to do with substations and converter stations and I think a little bit of line differentials. I want to emphasize this is an informal hearing, so we deal with only undisputed information. If anything develops that is disputed, we'll have to stop the informal hearing and reschedule a formal hearing. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Helgenhofer, do you?
When reviewing this case and looking on history, I think this is the first transmission that I'm reviewing on that HVDC line. You know, so it's going to be interesting to go through it and the rebuild and stuff like that. So I look forward to the dialogue and maybe some inquisitive questions I may have. So thank you.
And I guess I do have an opening comment, but question for Brian or Ma, isn't today like National Law Day or something like that?
Yes. So yes, it is.
Did you bring treats or something, or were you expecting us to?
No, I believe we're supposed to restate our oath, but I don't know it by heart. So I hope Brian does. He's going to lead.
I didn't even have any clue that was the thing today.
And well, by the way, I shouldn't have maybe joked on the record. There would be no treats going on in hearing between the company and us. But
you may be onto something. Instead of opening with the pledge, we make the lawyers open with their oath.
Maybe that can be a new thing. Okay, Commissioner Kringstad, as portfolio holder, I'll turn it over to you to for any opening comments that you might have, and then just pursue on through the case.
Sounds good.
Oh, and before you get started, if everybody that's going to be speaking or having to do with the case around the table, or if there's others, if we could go around and introduce everybody so we have it on our record. Thank you.
Yep.
Brian Johnson, legal for PSC.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Dan McCourtney, Minnesota Power.
Molly Smith, Fredrickson and Byron on behalf of Minnesota Power and Great River Energy.
Adam Renfin, PSC staff.
Christian Winter, Minnesota Power.
Do you guys want to say your titles too, just for the record, please?
Christian Winter, Manager of Regional Transmission Planning for Minnesota Power.
Brian Hunker, Great River Energy, Transmission Permitting Project Manager.
Good morning, Dan Ognis with Minnesota Power, Manager of Enterprise Projects.
Peter Schomer, Minnesota Power, Manager of HVDC Engineering and Operations.
What was your first name?
Peter.
Peter?
Yeah, good morning. Kyle Larson from Minnesota Power, Senior Construction Manager for Enterprise Projects.
Good morning. My name is Dan Gunderson. I'm the Vice President of our Transmission Planning and Operations Group for Minnesota Power.
Chris Hansen, PSC staff.
Perfect. That was on my first order of business, too. So I know you guys brought a presentation, so I'll just turn it over to you and let you guys walk through that, and then we'll just ask questions. Yeah, do you have people online?
Yes. Dan's who's online? Do you see?
I can go first. Mitchell Rogalski, Project Manager with Great River Energy.
Michael Swinson with Transmission Permitting with Great River Energy.
Okay. Perfect. So I'll turn it over to you.
So good morning. will be discussed a little bit further in the presentation that we have. There was a joint consolidated certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit application filed in December. We also filed a waiver request with that, requesting that the public hearing requirement be waived and a notice of opportunity for hearing be issued, which occurred. The last item we had was a request for protection of cultural resource information. The way that we've proposed, we're working on a proposed order. We're planning that all three would be covered in that order so that we're covered on the cultural as well. With that, I will turn it over to Dan McCourtney, who is going to go over the slides that we have. And I think we're ready to pull that up.
Well, all right. While those are getting pulled up, I just want to thank you guys for the opportunity to speak here today. We do have a couple of slides to run through here. We've got a great project team here that can hopefully answer any questions that you guys have. But again, thank you very much, and we're looking forward to talking through this project with you. So I think with that, we'll just get to it here. And again, please feel free to ask any questions here as we move forward. Minnesota Power owns and operates a 465-mile-long direct current transmission line that runs from Duluth, Minnesota to Center North Dakota. The terminal ends of that line were built in the 1970s with equipment that was intended to last 30 years. We're now well beyond 40 years, and we need to replace that obsolete infrastructure. And that's really what the project is here. Is Minnesota Power is proposing to replace its DC infrastructure at its Center North Dakota terminal. Next slide, please.
And this would have been built prior to our current siting.
Correct.
Act, correct? Correct. Okay.
So the project will provide a number of benefits to the electric system. It'll reduce a number of failures that we're currently experiencing on that transmission system. It'll increase line capacity, provide voltage regulation, black start capability, and it will also provide bidirectional energy transfer between Minnesota and North Dakota. Next slide, please. Just from a general location standpoint, make sure we're all grounded on where we're at here. Our center facility here is located about 5 miles as the crow flies southeast of the city of Center, across from Minn Kota's Milton Young generating facility. Next slide, please. We do have some constraints that are associated with the project. First one is that we can't take the line out of service while we're constructing, so we need to construct the project in phases over the course of about 5 years. The other one is the existing transmission lines really inhibit access into this location. If you take a look at the map that we have on the screen here, those green lines represent existing transmission lines, so you can see why we're constrained from a transmission standpoint. So as a result, we're proposing to construct a new converter station about a mile and a half. Slide five, please. So as a result, we're proposing to construct the new converter station about a mile and a half northeast of its current location and a new substation about a mile and a half northwest of its current location. We would then need to interconnect those facilities to each other, as well as the existing electric grid, which are the transmission lines that are shown on the map here. Minnesota Power would own most of the project infrastructure, with the exception of two 0.9-mile-long 230 kV transmission lines. Those would be owned and operated by Great River Energy. And we'll get into more detail on those here on the next slide. All right, so again, since we can't take an extended outage out of our DC line, we would build the project in two phases. The first phase would be to construct the new, what we're calling our Nelson Lake substation and the associated transmission lines to interconnect that into the electric grid. So basically, phase one is what you're seeing on this map here in blue. The two 230 kV transmission lines that are 0.9 miles long, owned by Great River Energy, are shown as the two solid dark blue lines on the map here. The second phase of construction would consist of building the converter station and the 345 kV transmission lines to interconnect that into the new Nelson Lake substation. And that's what you're seeing on this map here in orange.
Darren, once you've answered, I'll probably realize that I should have known this, but can you explain, there's Minnesota Power's big project here. I get that. And in the coming map, Minn Kota's line is nearby. What is GRE's role? Why are they building a transmission line over to your new facility? I'm not understanding their connection.
Yep, and I'd be more than happy to answer it, but we have transmission engineers who eat and sleep and breathe this. If we could maybe, if it's all right, we could have him come up here and explain that.
If everybody doesn't mind doing it now, because it keeps gnawing at me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good morning. Again, Christian Winter, Manager of Regional Transmission Planning for Minnesota Power. So when you look at the project and the way that it's arranged, GRE and Minnesota Power are establishing a new interconnection between the two companies at the Nelson Lake substation. And we were looking at the project and the siting of the project, and you don't see it on the map that's up there right now, but that existing infrastructure, Great River Energy's transmission line goes right past that site. And so there's an opportunity there to create additional reliability, redundancy, you know, as we move how or reconfigure how this HVDC terminal is connected to the system. And we change that point of interconnection. We didn't want to just connect to the Minnesota power line and have kind of a single point of connection back to that existing Square BD substation. We wanted to have further connections with GRE and improve our reliability and ability to back each other up from a transmission perspective.
Do you want to use that pointer and reference where that line is that's not on the map, just for reference?
Oh, did I?
You can do this. Show them.
Yeah, if we go back to this slide.
It's in the appendix.
And you can see on the screen here that I'm pointing at, you know, the Nelson Lake site is kind of right in this area up here. And the GRE line runs this way, and the Minnesota power line runs to the west. And so rather than just an in and out of this single Minnesota power line with a connection back to Square Butte East, where there's a lot of connections currently existing, we had an opportunity with the way Nelson Lake was sited to tie into GRE and have that greater connectivity, reliability, redundancy by connecting our transmission lines together.
Well, if you kept going northwest, where does GRE's line go to?
That line connects up to Stanton. That's the other end of it. So GRE's Stanton substation. And on to further connections.
And so when they close that down, what do they do with this line now?
They don't have
their Stanton station anymore.
Sure. So I'm thinking of it in terms of transmission grid. So regardless of if the generator is there or not, the grid is there, and there are other connections to the grid beyond Stanton. And just like there's other connections to the grid going south from here. And so we're really thinking about grid reliability and connectivity.
So in this case, this part of their overall system, they're just operating as a transmission operator.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And that's how we look at it. When we look at this new transmission tie at the Nelson Lake substation, it's a transmission to transmission connection for transmission grid reliability.
Okay. Thank you for now I understand and it makes sense to me. So appreciate that.
All right. Can we jump down to slide 7, please?
You have the power. And you don't have to turn that. If that one's easier, I think you can point to either one and then we'll do it.
Okay. All right. So the project's electric infrastructure would be on land owned either by Minn Kota or Minnesota Power. If you take a look at the map, I'm going to play with the toy here. The dark blue corridor that you're seeing here is what's owned by Minn Kota Power. The converter and the Nelson Lake locations that you're seeing there in yellow is land that's owned by Minnesota Power. The one exception would be the section line road to access into Nelson Lake, which is this light blue area that you're seeing on the screen there. And we are working, that is would be a section line easement, and we're also working on acquiring additional easement from that landowner right now.
Just for clarification, that upper square, that's the access road?
Yep. Hang on, still working on the... Yes, so this light blue area here, that's the access road. Obviously, we wouldn't need the entire width that you're seeing there for the access road.
Okay, and you're looking at getting the easements or with the landowner to get that?
Correct, we're finalizing those right now.
And the permit to put it in. Don't you need a permit to put that access road into?
So they obtained a permit at the local level.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I'll get into that here on the next slide. So where we're at from a regulatory standpoint is we received a conditional use permit from Oliver County last November. We then filed a joint consolidated certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit application. As we talked about earlier, one was for Minnesota Power's HVDC modernization project. The other one was for Great River Energy's 2.9 mile long 230 kV transmission lines, and those were under separate dockets here. We have performed literature as well as field cultural resource surveys, and we did receive concurrence from the State Historical Society of North Dakota. We also met last spring with Game and Fish and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about the project. We have performed Dakota Skipper habitat surveys. There's no critical habitat within the project area. We also performed presence-absence surveys within the project area, and the species was not present. We also completed wetland surveys throughout 2023 and
The conditional use permit wouldn't necessarily be the same thing as a road permit unless Oliver County does them in a combination. But are you saying that you have a road use permit?
We've got the road use agreement. It's with the county right now. They were waiting for us to get on the other side of this before they moved forward with it.
And that section line road will be addressed. That's being addressed with the county as well as far as using the section line right of way.
So ultimately, before construction, that would be something that would be turned in here.
Correct. Yes.
And is there a need in Oliver County for an approval of a weed management plan?
There is. Again, we've developed one. We wanted to get on the other side of this hearing and make sure there weren't any issues here, and then we plan on sharing that with Oliver County as well.
And they requested that it be submitted with the building permit application so they could approve it at the same time. So they Oliver County actually asked for it to be approved after this process.
Okay. I have a couple other questions on like agency correspondence. Do you want to ask them now or wait till the end? Okay. So one question I had was with, did you guys have any coordination at all with the Geological Survey? Because I know, I think it was noted in the application that there were some geologically, like, unstable areas.
Yeah, and let me jump down into our appendix here. So there is one site that is considered geologically unstable.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of where my guy is right there.
Okay.
We have spanned that. We're also going to be doing geotech as part of project development to make sure that, you know, we are on stable surface there.
Okay, and all of that ran through Geological Survey? Or that's just something that you guys
They provided did on the your data, own? And that's they typically okay. the approach. They'll provide the data, and then the company is responsible for ensuring that they've designed the project to account for those particular areas.
Okay.
So just to make sure, clarify which geological survey, the U.S. Geological Survey or the North Dakota Geological Survey?
I'd have to look. I don't know off the top of my head.
I wanted to say North Dakota provided the info, but it may have been USGS info, if that makes sense, because it would have come from the local.
I can look it up in the application. It's right here.
Okay.
Yeah, you want me to do it right now?
I don't need it at this moment, but
okay.
If we can clarify that at some point.
Okay.
Because generally, the North Dakota Geological Survey has more granular data on North Dakota.
Okay.
Areas prone to landslides and those kind of things than the U.S. Geological Survey does. So my preference is always that we use the more granular North Dakota data. So just wanted to clarify if that's what you were working off.
We can find it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. You're faster than I am.
What page was it on, Adam? Of Appendix E?
Turn your mic on, Adam. Turn your mic on.
The very first part of the application, page 67.
Yeah, and I think that was just my question because it looked like there was no response.
I will find the source of that data on that screen.
Perfect. And then another question I had, it looked like there was coordination with Minot Air Force Base.
Correct.
On this. Can you go into a little more detail on that? Because it sounded like there was some concern about, you know, like a training route and everything like that, correct?
Yeah, the original correspondence from Sam Warren said, hey, there may be a training route here. We need you to go through DOD. And that's what he ended up requesting. They did go through DOD Clearinghouse, and DOD Clearinghouse did not have any issues, and that is included in the application. It's the very last letter in, okay. Or it's the very last segment of the Appendix E.
Okay. And so I think if we're in, and this is just a point of clarification on some of these letters. So in Appendix E on page 93, when it talks about to expedite our review in the obstruction evaluation airport airspace analysis, was that a process that actually had to occur?
No, because this doesn't trigger FAA requirements. Okay. It's below 200 feet and it isn't in proximity to an airport.
Okay.
But I did, and I had the same, because I was going over this yesterday and I was like trying to track it through, and I did double check that the DOD Clearinghouse response came in after Sam had said we need this to go through, just to make sure the timing lined up. And so that was what was done from their point of view, but there is no FAA review required.
Okay, perfect. That's just what I wanted to clarify, because I wasn't, you know, sometimes with these correspondence we get a lot of you may need this, and so I just wanted to make sure if that was something that was still outstanding or that was nothing that
And I think it came literally in right before the application, so I even caught like one spot where we didn't have it in yet, but we did add it at the very end.
Okay.
So. Adam, did you have a question?
Yes, and I understand from, I think it's one of your biological or habitat surveys, that you intend to do another Dakota Skipper survey for presence of habitat next year, or is it this year?
Correct. So habitat presence absence surveys are good for 2 years. And so, you know, we did one set of surveys here in 2023. We did one survey in 2024. So we're due for those areas that were covered in 2023. We're going to be due to do presence absence surveys again here this year.
Okay, and you'll update the commission with the findings?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
bouncing back and forth here on you guys. I'm sorry. So there, as far as avoidance and exclusion areas here, there are no exclusion areas within the project corridor. From an avoidance standpoint, we have unevaluated cultural resources present in the project area. The project has been designed to avoid those, and we have received a State Historical Society concurrence. Other avoidance areas in the project include a small, like we talked about earlier, the geologically unstable portion of that project, and that area has been avoided. And then the only other avoidance area is Nelson Lake, which is south of the project, and we're avoiding that as well.
I know it's an avoidance area, but you're not actually encroaching on it. But is there any setback requirement from the wildlife management area?
We did receive feedback from Fish and Game, and they didn't say that there was any required setback.
I don't
from
recall
that
there is either, but I noticed you sure are awful close on the south side.
We are. So from a general timeline standpoint, pending receiving all approvals, we'd begin civil work in 2025 for the Nelson Lake and converter station. We'd begin construction of both facilities in earnest here in 2026, with transmission line construction occurring in 27 and 28, and a project in service date here the second half of 2029.
And I will say it was the North Dakota Geological Survey. I see it in our chart. So, but we can get you the specifics, more specifics if you need them.
Just to confirm, that's what that seems to indicate.
Yeah.
All right, so what we are requesting here from the commission is two certificates of corridor compatibility and route permit, one certification and route permit for Minnesota Power's HVDC modernization project, and one certification and route permit for Great River Energy's 2.9 mile long 230 kV transmission lines.
Okay. So one thing I don't feel like we touched on during this presentation is like this project would increase the capacity, correct?
It would. Well, so there's two things that have to happen here, right? Mm-hmm. So the terminal capacity would be increased, but then the line capacity things would have to be done to the line in order to increase that capacity. And that would be done, that's separate from these proceedings here.
And if it helps, we've talked about this, it'd be a certification filing is what we believe it would be, and we'll confirm that, but relying on the statutory, basically 350 feet, and we'll examine that just to confirm, but because it's an upgrade, it does fall under the certification filing provision. Okay.
Increasing the capacity, you're not increasing the voltage level, so it's still 250?
Correct. It would just be the capacity. Okay.
Do you have other testimony or besides just answering questions?
We didn't. We figured we would let you ask questions, and we have experts here to address whatever you may have questions on. Or if you would like us to walk through the engineering, for instance, in more detail, we could have Christian come up and walk through that.
I would like engineering details, but that's getting up. Matt, is it hard to switch back and forth between side decks? Can you bring up one of those photos that we talked about earlier? Like the second one, page 8. So this is This is just a slide from your presentation because I had it marked, knew where it was. So Minn Kota's line is also shown on here. Does the origination point, the old equipment that's being replaced, that would include where their line starts too, right? So are they benefiting from this too, or do they hook up separately from this?
Good morning again. Commissioner Christman, the Minn Kota line, if I can just, sorry, Dan, grab the pointer. The green line on right on here is the Minn Kota line.
Mm-hmm.
And that does run by the site that we're planning to build a converter station. There isn't any intent of connecting those together. Our existing converter station is actually down south of the origination substation for that Minn Kota transmission line a little ways. There's several facilities in this area that are separately fenced, and they're interconnected by some transmission lines in between. But nothing is intended to be done with the Minn Kota facilities.
So just you're close by and at some point, I suppose, over or under it, but not really connected to it.
We're neighbors, and we do have to cross that Minn Kota transmission line as we traverse with our 345 kV transmission line between the East Oliver and Nelson Lake substations. And we've coordinated with Minn Kota on that crossing. Okay. And the design of it, but and that's about it.
Then my other question is on this map, too, but it's probably back to them, I would think. But up where that farther east converter station is going to be, there's that house right there.
Mm. Yeah.
Certainly, Minn Kota's line is within 500 feet of it, not even a doubt. It would seem to me that, I'll finish my sentence here in a minute. That your east converter station must be awful close to 500 feet from that residence too.
Minnesota Power has purchased that residence.
Really? How the old neighborhood changes. Okay. So that solves that then.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about kind of the project cost? I'm just curious because there's such a wide range between what it could potentially cost. Can you just give me a little more background about kind of what's driving that wide range?
Sure, I can do that. The project cost in the application for the Minnesota Power portion includes most especially the HVDC converter station makes up the large majority of that project cost. And those cost estimates were based on preliminary engineering and engagement with the supplier of that converter station. We're actually in the final stages of finalizing those agreements to move forward into construction with that. And so we're dialing in the costs kind of as we speak. But at the point where we put the application together, mm-hmm. we still needed a relatively wide contingency range around there because there were uncertainties about how the design would play out, the mm-hmm. civil construction. And even, you know, as we've seen, over the last several months, there are lots of things that can impact our supply chain and our costs. And so that's why you see such a wide range there. The material, the equipment that's used in a project like this comes from all over the world, and it needs to be progressively dialed in as we gain more certainty on the project.
Mm-hmm. But the range that's submitted in the application is still valid?
Yeah, that's okay. The range we're looking at. Yep, and that's for the North Dakota portion only that's in the application.
Do you foresee any supply chain issues coming up?
It's a challenging time for supply chain, but we've been working on standing up this project for probably going on 3 years now, two, 3 years, and we've had a manufacturing slot reserved for all the major apparatus for at least a year and a half, 2 years. So we long ago sort of started to take steps to mitigate supply chain risks, especially in terms of the timing of delivery for those elements. So we're in a good place to move forward and to deliver the project.
So when you talked about, I'm sorry, Jill, were you done? Building that new substation, because you can't take it out, I mean, you need that power. So when you take down that old substation, are there any parts that you can use or salvage? I'm just curious on that.
It's a good question. We've been focused on construction plans for the new project, and so we haven't really detailed out our decommissioning plans for the existing assets on that site. A lot of it was installed in the late 1970s, and I'm sure we'll salvage and get salvage value for what we can, but there's a lot of it that probably doesn't have a lot of value left anymore either. So, but the answer to that is we don't have the decommissioning plan detailed out yet for that. We do plan to decommission it, but mm-hmm. we're working on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I have, since we have an
I need to step out. Okay. I will just say, it's not a question, but I hope that Minnesota Power on the decommissioned property will do similar to what GRE did on the Stanton Station, and even though it's not cited, and I don't know that we have authority to force cleanup, I hope it will be cleaned up like GRE did voluntarily.
Do you want us to wait for you?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I can go back and listen.
Okay. So I do just have a question, and this is sort of just for my own learning, and I will preface this it was an accountant and an engineer trying to have this discussion. So keep that in mind when I ask this question to another fellow engineer. But on page 11 of the application, when you're talking about how, you know, these new connections will enable excess generation to flow on the system when capacity is available, including times when the line is down for maintenance or for a reliability event. Does that mean that it's possible that with this new potential upgrade, that this could almost act like a power plant to a degree where it allows it to like ramp up and ramp down? Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. The good question. So one of the unique things about this project and about HVDC technology in general is that it's controllable. Unlike the AC transmission system, the typical grid, what flows on there is what flows based on physics. But with this HVDC transmission line, we have the ability to schedule power on it and the direction of that power and the amount that's on there. So we already kind of have that dispatchability of the HVDC line just by virtue of how the converter station works. Mm-hmm. And then what's referred to in that section, you know, where it's talking specifically, that's talking about this connection between Great River Energy and Minnesota Power at Nelson Lake and the additional reliability created by that, is that during times when that HVDC line is down, you know, where we don't have the ability to schedule power on it, then this additional AC connection between GRE and MP will enable us to have additional outlets, reliable, redundant outlets for the existing generation resources in the area.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the bidirectional as well?
Yeah, I can do that, and I can talk about some of the other attributes too. One of the particularly interesting things about the project is that the HVDC technology that's being implemented today, the voltage source converter technology, is state of the art, and it's different from what they had in the 1970s, if you can believe that. But it provides some additional things we can do. We could always schedule power flow on the HVDC line, but the voltage source converters now being brand new, give us the ability to schedule that in either direction. We kind of lost that ability over time with the original converters because it's been one way, but we have the ability to move power east to west or west to east and schedule it as makes sense for reliability or economic operation of the grid. The converter itself also provides some additional value. Dan had a slide on that that listed some things kind of like power plant attributes, like voltage regulation and frequency response, because of that controllability and the nature of the technology. So it's sort of like high-tech transmission in a way.
Okay. Thank you. Like I said, that was just kind of an aside for my own information. Yeah.
Where's that controllable capability from? I mean, where do you manage it from? I'm trying to do a visualization. You have these substations and transmission, but where do you control that from?
The specific thing that is sort of the gateway is that HVDC converter station. Mm-hmm. So the East Oliver station and the HVDC converter, the building in on that site. And then as far as where it gets controlled from, it's tied to our operations control center, and so we would control the dispatch from our operators would control the dispatch like they control other parts of the mm-hmm. transmission system, but in this case they'd be able to control how much power is flowing on there.
And that's in Duluth?
Yeah, yep. That's where our operations are located. Yes. Yep. It can be operated locally. Each end has local operational capability too, but it all aggregates back to our overall grid operations.
Anything else about this application in particular that we maybe haven't touched on that's a little unique you want us to know about?
I think one thing, just so that we have it clean in the record, when we were going through prep, we realized that there were some discrepancies in the cultural resource tables, and we confirmed with Mergent, and they provided new tables. So when we file the proposed order, we will include those. The reason it gets partly confusing is the phase one and phase two corridors overlap each other. So I think there was some double counting. And my understanding is we have 9 total between the two corridors, 9 total cultural resource sites that need to be avoided, and those have been avoided. And all of this is consistent with the reports, but we want to make sure that the info is clear as well. And then also in the presentation in the table, we clarified some of the exclusion avoidance areas to make it really clear that there aren't any exclusion areas present. We had talked about Dakota Skipper, but there isn't Dakota Skipper habitat, so we wanted to make sure that that was super clear for this, so we did update those charts. But otherwise, I think everything else is pretty straightforward that we had, and we didn't really have correspondence come in afterwards because everything was in as of the time of the application.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just going to, we have it as just a finding that we'll it's a question. Do you want to touch on the FERC finding at all and explain? Or leave well enough alone? I think that's a question, Victor. Do we need to?
Is it relative to the cost?
Yeah.
Well, while they discuss that, I'm going to ask a question. Yes. Just for clarification. I understand the two phases, because you can't take anything out. But let's say phase one is done, but that doesn't get in service until phase two is completed, right? So it's your current is going to continue in operation, but you're building it in two phases, but the project does not get in service until 2029.
Let me back up here for a second. All right. So phase one, the Nelson Lake substation mm-hmm. would be placed into service prior to the converter being placed into service.
Okay, so you'll put it in service and then decommission that. I mean, decommission the old substation?
The old substation will stay in place because there's still a lot of infrastructure that runs into it.
Let me jump down right there.
So, you know, see the existing substation, the center AC substation that you're seeing there? That still is going to exist. There's still going to be transmission infrastructure into it.
Okay, so that will always stay in place.
Yes.
Will that get upgraded will any of that get upgraded? I know you're building the new one, but will anything there be upgraded? Meanwhile, it's been in service since the 70s.
Do you want to take it or you want me to?
Sure, I can address that. So at the existing Square Butte substation that's shared by Minn Kota and Minnesota Power, it's the one, always a surprise where it shows up. It's the one right there. That's the 230 kV substation. That one is going to remain in place. The only upgrade that's going to take place to that as part of this project is that we're going to bring a second transmission line into it adjacent to the existing Minnesota Power transmission line. So there'll be a couple of breakers put in to accommodate a new line entrance. But otherwise, there isn't any, as part of this project at least, there isn't any plan for further updating of that site. And just to be clear, you know, the part that may be decommissioned after the project is this rectangle to the east of that Square Butte substation, which is the existing HVDC converter station that was constructed in the late 70s.
And that's what's going to be taken now.
That's what may be removed after we build a new one, yes.
Okay. So that new substation you're looking at being completed in the first phase and then operational, what's the time period there?
2028.
Yeah, if it's 2020.
Yeah.
2028, thank you.
And it may be just to be clear, is we need that new phase one Nelson Lake substation to be completed and in service so that we have a place to plug in the DC line once phase two is complete. So that's why the phasing of it, we got to get the first part done so that we can connect the upgraded HVDC terminal to it. And that's part of that orderly transition, you know, managing the outage constraints there.
Okay.
So I think the unique circumstance that Commissioner Kringstad was speaking to was that with these type of lines and this type of equipment, you can apply for a number of FERC incentives. I believe this project, you have an application for two of the three of them. And as part of a FERC order, they will not allow you, as I understand it, to build this unless and until North Dakota renders a decision through an order that reads that we find this project to have a certain attribute like reliability or the reduction of congestion. So I was wondering maybe if you could speak to kind of what went on there and kind of how that may have surprised you when you obtained that order, you know, knowing that you all don't have any customers in North Dakota.
Yeah, let me start with one. I'll start with one clarification, then I'm going to turn it over to Christian. So the project isn't prohibited from being constructed. I just want to make sure it's clear. The incentive, it would be receiving the incentive would be, this is something that needs to be provided to receive this incentive, but it isn't a prohibition on construction. So before that, and then I'll turn it over to Christian to talk more detail about that process, and I can help as needed.
Yeah, and not to get into the weeds on it, but you know the FERC incentive rates, as you laid out, they offer, you know, different tools for us to manage our risk with our financial risk with a project like this, and so that incentive rate filing was made for the entirety of this package of projects, which includes the North Dakota and the Minnesota facilities, the other end of the DC line, and you know I guess I would say in our view, normally and in our past experience in a FERC filing like that, you satisfy minimum criteria, and they will grant those incentives. In this case, they looked at it and they said in Minnesota, you have a certificate of need in hand from the state of Minnesota, and that's clearly a demonstration of, you know, Minnesota's view that there are reliability and congestion benefits from the project, but you don't have permits in hand from North Dakota, and so we want you to go get those permits and then come back to us, you know, with a, essentially having those permits in hand, having North Dakota also acknowledge the reliability and congestion benefits of the project, and then FERC would be willing to grant those incentive rates for the North Dakota facilities. So they granted the incentive rates for the Minnesota facilities based on the certificate of need, and they wanted us to make a compliance filing after North Dakota permit decision is made, to before they'll grant the North Dakota facilities the incentive rate treatment. And I'll just add one other context thing on there. You know, one of those sort of minimum criteria that's normal, again, in our view, in the FERC process is that MISO has also reviewed the project and found, and it's gone through an open and transparent process, and reliability has been demonstrated and congestion benefits. And we did go through a MISO review process for this, and it was incorporated into and approved by the MISO board as part of MTEP 24, actually as a transmission delivery service project because of the way the HVDC line functions. But in the past, you know, that has met the minimum threshold by itself for FERC to grant incentive rates. But in this case, they set the MISO approval aside, and they decided that they wanted to focus on the state approvals, and again, of which we already have the Minnesota state approval for the Minnesota facilities and for our cost recovery of the whole project. But they wanted to see the North Dakota Commission's decision on the North Dakota facilities before they were willing to grant the incentive rates for the North Dakota facilities.
So is it correct to say that if you don't receive, well, first of all, what are the different ways in which you can qualify to receive that incentive rate within North Dakota?
Thank you.
Did you want to?
Yeah, and I missed your question. I'm sorry, Adam.
Yeah, what are the different ways in which you can qualify to receive the incentive rates within the North Dakota?
And you mean within the FERC
context? Within the FERC context, yeah.
So I think I'll just preface this saying I think that there's probably somewhat lack of recognition that North Dakota doesn't have a need process like there is in Minnesota. So the one thing that we're planning to do, which is common in our orders for siting, is to include a finding that talks about the design or the intent of the project. So it's designed to meet these particular reliability, congestion issues, et cetera. The second is that the commission's decision factors in the order provision already do address efficient, you know, siting of facilities while maintaining reliability on the system. So I think between the two, the finding and then the order provisions, that should be what is sufficient to present to FERC, and that's the plan at this point.
Excuse me for being
out
of sync here, but something has come up that needs resolution, so I'm leaving, but go ahead and finish up the hearing, and I'll have to review it on the recording.
Okay, thank you.
So, go ahead, you finish up.
So then, if we don't issue some statement regarding how this project provides reliability or congestion savings, then you would not obtain those incentive adders?
I think we're not asking the commission to do anything other than what is typically done. We're going to take the order that comes out here with the standard statements about why are we building this project as a finding, the conclusions of law that the commission always issues when they issue an order and present those to FERC. We believe those are sufficient to meet the requirements. If FERC were to have a difference of opinion, then we would have to address it at that point because we don't have enough information to understand why they may not want it. So I think at this point, we feel comfortable and confident with this approach. And if there's any concerns, we would certainly come back as needed to talk with the commission. But we think that this is all that is needed at this point.
So, okay. Christian? So just to be clear, all you're asking for is kind of like our what you're requesting from us is our standard permits through the siting process, not necessarily what Minnesota did, which was like a certificate of public convenience and necessity speaking to the need.
Correct. Yes. And it's it is because that is a different process in Minnesota, and that wasn't fully recognized necessarily by FERC, but we believe that between the findings and the commission's standard order provisions, it should satisfy what FERC needs anyway. So yes, we are not asking for anything different than the normal ask in this case. So yes, and that's in part why we didn't necessarily raise it, because it is sort of a complicated issue, and we had talked about it with staff earlier, and this was the approach that everyone agreed was the appropriate approach for it. So.
Okay. That's helpful. Yeah, I just wanted to know kind of if these two issues were intersecting in one proceeding or how we were handling that, so that's helpful.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Can I have you recap again? I understand the need, the amount of outages that we're having, the old equipment needs to be replaced. A lot of this is going to Minnesota, you know. But recap for us the benefits to North Dakota.
So, Christian?
Sure, I can do that. Yeah, and as you stated, first and foremost, this is a project that's meant to upgrade existing assets, mm-hmm. renew them, you know, that are aging and failing. And the when we kind of ran through some of those benefits earlier, some things that this project accomplishes over and above what the existing HVDC converter station is doing there, we're going to be supporting the voltage of the local North Dakota system, much like a generator does. The existing HVDC system relies on and kind of takes voltage support from the system, but the new one, because of the different technology, it actually supports the system, gives back voltage support. We will have bidirectional capability. So as you said, typically the flow is from west to east out of North Dakota. But this project, and if you think about it in terms of resiliency and reliability, it does create the opportunity, the ability to move power from east to west into North Dakota that doesn't exist today with the existing HVDC converter stations. And then it has some of those other attributes that are a little more in the weeds of the detailed design, but you know, frequency response and the ability to support black start restoration as an asset in that process that can help rebuild the grid. Those are all things that we don't necessarily get from the existing converter station that will be present from the converter station located in North Dakota and available to support the North Dakota grid.
Okay. I'm just going to ask, does anybody have any staff? I mean, questions? Does staff have any questions? Nope. As a company, do you have anything else you want to present to us?
I think that we've covered everything. I think we're good. We do have a proposed order. Brian and Victor and Adam, just let me know if you want certifications or not, and then I'll finalize the order and we can submit that for consideration.
You're talking certification order provisions. Is there any trees and shrubs impacted in this?
We don't think so at this point. Possible, but we don't think so at this point.
Should we do one just to be safe? A tree and shrub mitigation?
Do you want to just do that, just the tree and shrub,
well, no,
or the whole thing?
What I was thinking is, you know, it's pretty standard that for a new permit like this, we would do a certification order provisions.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Adam and Brian can get you that sent over if they haven't already. But yeah, let's just put the tree and shrub along with it. Just in case. If we don't need it, great. But it's a pretty simple one pager to add on to those.
That sounds good. Yeah, we'll plan on that. And we'll have one signed by each company. And then the way it's outlined in the order is just tying back to the figures, to figures 2A through C, because it specifically describes the corridors and the routes. So for each portion of their facilities within those corridors. So
okay.
Otherwise, we'll plan to submit that, and we'll look for the order provision or certification provisions. So
okay. Yep. And no other late filed exhibits or anything like that?
I think the only, when we file the proposed order, we'll submit our updated cultural resource tables just to get that clear in the record. We'll confirm the geological data source. And I think that was it, as far as I recall. I didn't have any, these others are just my notes for things in the future, but I didn't have anything else. Yeah, I mean, we won't have that until, so we will plan that we are submitting it. I've got it as a note, but I wasn't going to plan to submit it as a formal part of pre-order, if that makes sense. That's, yeah. But we will make a note that we are filing it. Yep.
So presented today was this PowerPoint. Is there any objection that this become part of the record?
No objection.
None from staff.
Okay. Anything else, Brian, that you could think of that to come before we end?
No issues with the recording or any of the conversation today being part of the record as well?
No issues at all.
And staff doesn't have any either.
Okay. So it is Thursday, May 1st at 11:47, and we are closing this informal hearing on PU 24-381 and 24-382.
Thank you.